talking with you.
Yep. Okay. Thank you, AJ. So I'm going to be talking about soil organic matter solutions for peri-urban market farms. And I just want to start out, for anyone who may not be familiar with what I mean by peri-urban market farm, farms in southern New England, where I'm doing my work, and around a lot of urban areas are now completely surrounded by the urban-suburban landscape. This is a picture of one of our largest farms in Rhode Island. It's over 100 acres, and even so, you can see it's completely surrounded by the urban-suburban environment. And this produces a number of challenges for growers, but it also produces excellent opportunities for selling direct to consumer, and the growers are heavily taking advantage of that. So our peri-urban market farms tend to primarily sell direct. They tend to be very small because land values are extremely high. They have a very high diversity of both crops and marketing strategies, basically because they're trying to constantly have something to offer their customers. And they're trying to maximize their income per acre. These numbers here are just for vegetables. These farms also get an enormous amount of their income from agritourism, anything that brings the consumer to their farm. And that has a lot of effect on the way they farm also. So this kind of farming creates some real challenges that are different from challenges faced in areas where farming is more extensive and where they're handling fewer crops. Soil organic matter, as you know, is key to rhizosphere health, and intensive vegetable production depletes soil organic matter. High biomass cover crops have been shown to add soil organic matter very effectively, but for these growers, they represent a large decrease in income because there's no way to sell these crops, there's no market for them, and they expand their equipment needs because these farms are not normally growing grains and high density legumes and things like that. Compost and organic wastes are another approach to adding soil organic matter, but they raise issues with nitrogen and phosphorus, which tend to be sensitive in these heavily urbanized watersheds, and they can be expensive and logistically complex. So what I'm reporting on now is actually two different studies, one that we just recently concluded, a second that's currently ongoing, looking at possible solutions to these problems. So the first solution we looked at was intercropping and reduced tillage. Could we improve soil organic matter without taking the land out of crop production? So the standard approach that our farmers use is described here. It's pretty typical, and it decreases soil organic matter by about 5% per year. So now this doesn't mean that the soil organic matter level goes, for instance, from 5% soil organic matter to zero. It means it goes from 5 to 4.95, okay? We looked at three alternative approaches. The first was zone tillage into a killed rye cover crop, basically trying to minimize our tillage to just the planting zone. The second was permanent beds with a perennial living mulch between the beds. And the third was intercropping our vegetables with crimson clover, using the crimson clover to suppress weeds and also to give us an overwintering cover crop without further tillage. Okay, we looked at these actually over 3 years. These numbers that I'm showing you here are for the second and third years. So all of these plots had already been in the treatment for a full year before these numbers were collected. We made a bunch of changes in the crops we were growing between 2010 and 2011, so I'm not reporting those numbers. But what we saw, and I'll also tell you that on these graphs and the ones on the next slide, the colors are the same all the way through. Okay, so the standard is always the dark red. What we found, first of all, was that in terms of yield, zone tillage did not work. It suppressed yield enormously and was basically, it turned out to be impossible to keep the weeds under control in that system. And the system suppressed growth of the vegetable crops sufficiently that they couldn't outcompete the weeds. So we basically had essentially no yield. The other treatments varied somewhat by crop. With cucumbers and melons, where we were growing them on black plastic mulch, which is standard in our area to raise the soil temperature, both the living mulch and the intercrop yielded comparably to the standard practice. With tomatoes, the living mulch did not do particularly well, but the intercrop was similar to the standard. With cabbage, we got the same results in 2012 when we transplanted, but in 2011, when we had direct seeded the cabbage, the intercropping suppressed establishment of the cabbage enough that we did not get significant yield. So basically what we found from this was that it depends on the crop, but you can get good yield from some of these methods. What about soil? Well, what we found with soil was that the only one that was significantly better than the standard was the zone till. So it's good for the soil, but not a starter because you don't get any yield. The living mulch was able to maintain the soil organic matter at a more or less even keel, but not actually increase it. It did increase soil carbon, however. Soil microbial activity, again, was best in the zone till, but it was also good in the living mulch. We also discovered that there was an enormous amount of spatial variability in our plots, which reduced the significance of a lot of numbers. So what were the conclusions from this? Was that zone till was the best for the soil, but worse for yield? Living mulch was similar to zone till for soil, which is good, and yield similar to the standard, again good, for crops on plastic mulch. However, we had to lay the plastic mulch by hand, because a plastic mulch layer is incompatible with the perennial living mulch. So there's a real question whether growers would adopt this, because laying plastic mulch by hand is an enormous amount of work. Intercropping was similar to the standard for soil and for yields for transplanted crops, but not for direct seeded crops, and none of these approaches really increased our soil organic matter. The best they could do was hold it steady. So we're continuing to work on some of these, but we also moved on to some other possible solutions. And that solution was using urban organic wastes as a carbon source. Okay, peri-urban growers often do not have good access to livestock manure. To the extent that we do much livestock production, it tends to be pastured rather than confinement raised, because of the higher price consumers will pay for pasture-raised product. But when you're raising on pasture, you can't then easily collect the manure and put it on something else. There is a lot of commercial compost and bark mulch available, but because those are used in landscaping, they're very expensive. and often beyond the reach of a vegetable producer. Biosolids are abundant. Biosolids are processed human waste or sewage sludge, very abundant in urban areas, but they have enormous regulatory and social acceptance challenges that effectively prohibit growers from using them, even though they've been repeatedly shown to be an effective fertilizer source. There are a number of other wastes that have potential, and so we decided to look at some of these. So this particular study involved 6 different amendments and a synthetic fertilizer control. And the idea with the synthetic fertilizer control was that we were adding the nutrients that the crop needed at agronomic levels, but not adding any organic matter to the system. Okay. We looked at 3 crops, potatoes, butternut squash, and sweet corn. And the entire field, all the treatments, had winter rye as a winter cover crop, which is a very standard practice in our area. Amendments were added prior to planting. They were standardized based on the amount of carbon applied, so 10,000 kilograms per hectare. Weeds controlled by cultivation, 4 replications, randomized block with 21 square meter plots. So the plots were each, they're 15 feet by 15 feet, or 21 square meters. Okay, so these are just the results from the first year. As I say, this study is ongoing. We did find significant differences in the change in soil organic matter. And we decided to use the change in organic matter levels rather than the absolute organic matter levels, because we also discovered that even though the field we were using had not been cropped in over 5 years, there was an enormous organic matter gradient across the width of the field, which meant that every single block had a different base organic matter level. What we found was that paper fiber, the yard waste biosolid co-compost, and the yard waste compost had significantly greater increase in organic matter levels than the control did. We also found that increase in organic matter varied by crop, with it being lowest in squash and highest in sweet corn. Crop yields were not significantly different across the treatments for the first year. Okay, so what could we conclude from the first year of this study? That paper fiber and yard waste are the best sources of carbon for building soil organic matter. Now, this is interesting in some respects in that yard waste is generally considered not to be a particularly good compost because it is so low in nitrogen and pretty much devoid of nutrients. But here you can see it's good for building the organic matter levels. Co-composting yard waste and biosolids provides similar levels of organic matter. It provides the nitrogen you need to have no yield reduction, and because they're co-composted together, it gets around the biosolids regulations. You can sell it as compost rather than as biosolids. We also found that the type of carbon in your organic matter may be more important than the C-to-N ratio. As you can see here, with the exception of the paper fiber, which had really high carbon and essentially no nitrogen in it, the C-to-N ratios were very similar, yet the results were very different. It looks like lignin-rich amendments may actually be the best choice for trying to increase your soil organic matter. So I need to do some acknowledgments here. These two studies were primarily done by my graduate students. Jeff Piper, who graduated a year ago and is now with the Colorado State University Extension Service in Eagle County, Colorado, did the intercropping and reduced tillage study as his master's thesis. And he was assisted by undergraduate Emily Cotter and funded by Northeastern SARE. The urban organic waste study is being done by my current graduate student, Rebecca Long, who is here. She has poster number 36, which she's presenting tomorrow. I encourage you to go look at it and learn more about her project. And she has been assisted by Edwin Fava, Angela Possinger, Robert Burkaw, and funded by the Rhode Island Agriculture Experiment Station. Okay, questions?
Questions for Rebecca?
Yes.
Salt organic matter for the three crops, that's at the end of the season?
That's actually the change between pre-planting in last year and pre-planting this year.
At the beginning of the season, not at the end of the season.
Right, but after the first season,
right.
Yeah. Yes.
With the living mulches, mm-hmm. Now, what about using them as annuals, something that could cover in the same season? And then did you look at root knot nematodes at all with your living mulches?
We did not look at root knot nematodes, reversing the order of your questions, mostly because we don't have a lot of problems with them where we are.
Okay.
One of the nice things about being in New England instead of Florida. As far as annual mulches, we actually are doing quite a bit on the farm with annual mulches of perennial ryegrass, but our growing season is such that if we plant clover as an annual mulch, it really doesn't get going until we're coming out of the field.
That's sometimes a good thing.
Yeah, it depends.
Then it doesn't compete with it.
Right, it depends on what you're...
You get enough of a canopy to suppress the weeds, but not enough to suppress the...
Right. Our problem with clover is that in the first year, we don't get enough of a canopy to suppress anything.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. One more question.
I was really interested in your statement that you could get around biopellets regulations, mm-hmm. like co-composting with organic matter.
Yes.
Would that be allowed in a certified organic system?
Or no.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
Only conventional.
Right. Only conventional. Yeah, it would not be allowed in certified organic. Okay, any other questions?
I'm sure there are more pressing questions. Rebecca will certainly be around,
yes.
So feel free to interact with her. Thank you, Rebecca.